Welcome to the Tokyo Lens podcast, and as always, if you are a regular listener, welcome back. What do Japanese people think about Japan? Well, that is the big topic of today. I think we all know what we think about Japan and why we are interested in it, but I wanted to cover this today because a study came out and I thought that the results were really interesting and might give a little bit of value. So there was an online study conducted quite recently by the Nippon Foundation. Now, this survey in particular focused on teenagers in the range of about 17 to 19 years old and tried to focus on a moderately broad range of topics, hopefully in an attempt to kind of view the future mindsets of where the country may be headed. So I kind of wanted to share some of this with you guys today and talk over some of these points because I thought there's a lot of really good stuff in here. So first and foremost, the first question to come up was quite simply, is Japan a good country? And actually, the thing that stood out to me when I saw this is there is a pie chart right in here. And right off the bat, there is a giant yellow section that is near 20%. It's actually 16.4% of the population responded with, I don't know. Only 6.7% of people responded with, no. And the remaining, if for those of you who can do quick math, 76.9% of the population stated that, yes, Japan is a good country. What do you think? Do you think that Japan overall is a good country? I say it again and again, whether it be here in the podcast or on the channel. In the end, Japan is a country just like any other, so it has its ups and its downs. I think it's really hard to nail down whether or not a country's good, but I think it's pretty easy to nail down whether it's good for you personally. But inside of this 6.7% of people who said no, when they kind of asked them about why they said no, there were some interesting things that were cited. For example, and I believe these will come up later on in a little more detail, the inequality, which is prevalent in Japan, or things like sexual discrimination, which is no stranger in this country, or the rise of something called black companies. Now, these right here, if you don't know what a black company is, this is something that's really important to know. So a quick 30-second overview of a black company. A black company is a company that basically has no regard for its employees. They make very questionable ethical choices, and more often than not, the people who work for these companies end up paying for it. That's a basic description. I'm not going to go ahead and out any companies or their names right now, but there are several companies, one or two in particular, which have become very, very famous for their employees being overworked to the point of experience incredible mental health issues and then taking their own lives. We have spoken in previous podcasts about the difficulties faced by Japanese people in Japan, especially in an office. And one of these difficulties is that the bullying that you may have learned about that goes on within Japanese schools and whatnot continues into Japanese corporate culture in some companies, not in all. And I cannot express this enough. And this, again, can be said for many countries around the world. You're going to have great companies and you're going to have not such great companies and you're going to have terrible companies. Japan is no different in that regard. But this has been quite a topic in the news as of late. As of late can be anywhere from the last 1 to 10 years, to be honest. It's just this topic of black companies is coming up more and more. Moving aside from this, it's not uncommon to have something in a really traditional Japanese companies. Let me tell you a couple stories, because the sidebars and little info shares are really part of what this podcast is about. So two stories that I think will give you a little bit of value. I talked to a friend who applied for a job at a Japanese company. Now, this person was a Japanese person, and the company was a really, really big traditional Japanese company. Now, this particular individual finally got in, and when they did their initial training at the company where they have all the new employees coming in a single room, they obviously all have to dress very similarly, black suit, white shirt, shoes and hairstyle, everything decided. But what really threw that person off is the fact that they were all placed little school desks with the little plastic chairs. You know, the kind that you would have kind of in elementary school. And at the beginning of this speech by the management, they said that these chairs and desks that you are put in today are to remind you of what it's like to start at the beginning of something. You will have a lifelong journey in this company because we will keep you. And that's one thing that is great about Japanese companies, or can be great in some ways, is that you get basically lifetime employment. It's called Seishain, and that's basically their lifetime employment. It's kind of like having tenure at a university. Unless you commit a crime, the chances of you actually being fired or released are slim to none. But getting back to the main point of the sidebar is that they're given these little plastic chairs in elementary school style desks and pointed out that this is to remind them that they are starting at the bottom. And then there's inside of that, the whole senpai kohai culture. I'm not even going to get all into that. The other story that really, really stood out to me, and it seems like it's become a lot less common, but when I moved out to Japan in 2007, I had a friend who had just moved back from living in Canada for a year and had their application to several major traditional Japanese companies rejected simply on the basis that they had lived overseas. So they no longer had the pure Japanese mindset. They were a little more international, and that company wanted to keep the traditional Japanese way. This is something that you don't really see as much anymore, with a lot of Japanese companies now aiming to bring people in a more international way. But these little things give a peek into some of the more Japanese aspects of company life that may differ from wherever you are. Now, getting back to the survey, thank you for bearing with that sidebar. I hope you got something out of it. The next question following up from this was, what's the best thing about Japan? Now, I like this. I really like the answers in here. The percentages, by the way, on this are all off. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 5 different bars, and they're all around 50%. So I don't really understand how their math on this one works. But the first one, 55.3% of people listed anime and manga. I think a lot of people from outside of Japan would express a love for this as well, just as much as the second one, which is 54.6 of people saying Japanese food. I think we can all agree that Japanese food is something that kind of brings us all together. Now, the third one isn't something you immediately think of when you think of Japan, but it's one that Japan is really good at. And I'm going to add a little mini tiny sidebar in here. The third one at 50.4% is nature. Now, something that I've always found really interesting, over 70% of Japan is mountainous, which means less than 30%. And these are rough numbers. The actual number is more like 77 or something crazy like that. Don't quote me. But the rest of Japan, there's only like 30 or less percent that's actually livable city space. So a vast majority of this country is nature. And it's quite exciting to be able to go out and explore, especially some of the mountain paths. The number of hidden, abandoned spots that you will find if you travel off the beaten path in Japan. I have done entire podcast episodes previously on why it is important to get out of Tokyo. And honestly, I mentioned a lot of cities in there, but even the space in between these cities. For example, people who come to Tokyo often say that one of the most exciting adventures you can have is to wander the stops in between the Yamanote Line stations. The Yamanote Line being the major loop line that goes around the city center of Tokyo. In between the stations, there is so much to be discovered. Similarly, in between cities in Japan, there's so much to be discovered and found. So if you find yourself here and you have the ability and bravery to rent a car, I highly recommend that. Going on a little hidden spots and little back adventure areas, mountain roads road trip is fantastic. You can also do a lot of it by train and just get off at some of the lesser known stations and check it out. The Japan Rail Pass is great for that, but I digress. Let's jump back into the survey here. So the next one that they asked these teenagers again was, what does Japan... No. I'm going to go back to the next one, which is the best thing about Japan. Sorry, I totally skipped over one really important one, and it's actually one of my favorites, something that you see all the time within my video content, and that is public safety. I can't believe I almost skipped over that one. Sorry, guys. This public safety one is so big. Now, this is also a double-edged sword. You see, it's great. I can set my camera down and walk a great distance away to get a shot. There's a shot where I'd actually put my camera down by the river and then gone up to the road and ran across a bridge and back, came back, and my camera was still there recording. And not for one second did I worry that my camera would disappear. I definitely don't feel the same way when I'm in North America, whether it be Canada or the States. I definitely didn't feel the same way in Australia or in Europe. So Japan definitely has that. But again, a country like any other, keep in mind that Japan is filled with people from all around the world, and all different types of people, even within the Japanese category of people itself. So while Japan is well known for being safe, it doesn't mean that you are 100% guaranteed to be crime free. Like, I know every single time that I put my camera down, I'm not worried, but I'm very aware that I'm taking a calculated risk. Just because it hasn't happened yet and because it's unlikely doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And the more comfort you feel and the more success you have with this, I've mentioned before, one of the very first times that I came into Japan, I accidentally left one of my luggage right in the station because I ran into a friend excitedly, and I went back half an hour later and the luggage was still there, untouched. But in the exact same way, there most definitely is things like theft in Japan. And if you've ever actually sat down and watched an evening of Japanese news, you'll see that just like any other country in the world, there is worse. But the next section of this survey was, what does Japan lack? Now, first and foremost, the biggest bar listed in here is gender equality. Now, gender equality, I could give you about 100 different examples of where gender equality is lacking in Japan, but again, I could probably give examples for pretty much any country I've been to. I don't think as a society as a whole in the world that we're quite where we want to be with things like gender equality, but there's a story from Japanese news quite recently that stands out, and I'm not going to bother pulling up an article or anything from it. This particular story is of the Japanese work dress code that requires women to wear high heels. Now, this is something that if you're interested in the story, I highly recommend you Google it and check it out. I will give you a brief overview right now. It's kind of common in Japan that whether it be during the job hunt interview process, etc., that women are expected, and especially in some offices in more traditional Japanese companies like we referenced before, women are expected to wear high heels. I'm not going to get super deep into all the reasons of why, but there are obviously a growing number of people who don't feel that this is an appropriate choice of dress code. Everything from comfort to simply what, you know, prolonged use of something like high heels can do to someone's body alone. This is a fight that has broken out in Japan. And there is, I believe, don't quote me, an actress who is kind of leading the charge against it. It started with a tweet that she put out, and then it just kind of grew into a movement. It recently made it into Japan's labor ministry, where the labor minister, if I'm not mistaken, was like, no, it is required as per Japanese dress code. This is definitely something that we need. Women need to wear heels. And again, the internet has started to blow up. So gender equality is definitely something that Japan is left in wanting. And the next things on the list are things like diplomatic power, quality of education, political influence, and economic power. There's two that I want to address in here, and I want to address them very lightly. The first one is quality education. I think every single country is going to have its own inward view on how strict its educational policies are. There's a conversation I had with somebody in the education industry in Japan quite recently, where they mentioned that back in like the 70s and 80s, Japan moved into a boom. And a lot of this was given birth because people had unique ideas and were taking on unique challenges. And all these major companies started to grow. Things like Sony, Sharp, Hitachi, Toyota, all of these companies started to become major worldwide brand companies. And at this time, what was most necessary was workers that could fill these companies and produce solid work. They needed worker bees. And so there's, it seems that, and again, I'm looking for sources on this, so give me some time. If you happen to know any sources, DM me on it. If you know an article or a book or anything that addresses this, it's a topic that I'd love to cover in more detail. But it said that the heads of these corporations contributed greatly into the development of the current Japanese education system. And the goal was to create workers, not independent thinkers, not independent actors, but people who could follow direction and work. And it's fairly commonly known inside of Japan that this is what the Japanese education system excels at. Again, that information there, I do not have a source to cite. So take that more as like, you know, hearsay, conjecture, whatever you will. Don't take it as solid fact until we have a way to prove it. If somebody does share any sources for it for me, or if I am able to find the sources for it, I will be sure to link them in the podcast description or amend this episode. So please don't worry about that. Now, that being said, the other one is economic power. It's quite commonly talked about in Japan. I think every country talks about their economic situation really often, and Japan is no different from that. But there are minor adjustments, just as somebody who lives in Japan, that look on the surface like they could potentially have an impact on the overall economy. One of my personal favorites is a story of when I went to build my computer. And I went to Akihabara, and I got there at something like 10 o'clock in the morning, but the shop didn't open till 11:30. And I was like, okay, I'll come back after work. I finish work at like 7. I checked the closing time of the shop, and the shop closed at 7, which means in Tokyo, one of the biggest metropolises in the world, in Akihabara, probably one of, if not the electronics and computer-based mecca of the world outside of, you know, Shenzhen and China and stuff, the shop was only open from 11:30 in the morning to 7 p.m. That's a very, very, very brief opening time for such an important shop in such a major area. And when I checked other computer shops, the average was roughly 10 or 11 a.m. to roughly 6 or 7 p.m. I think, honestly, something like a 9 a.m. to, you know, 8 p.m. runtime for these shops would be desirable. But when you get outside of the main area of Tokyo, you get shops that are open a lot longer, shopping malls, etc. Anyways, I digress from this sidebar. Now, this survey, it's important to mention that this isn't actually the first survey of this. I think they've done 14 runs of this type of survey and usually focuses on the youth. For example, in this one, they talked about, do these youth want to live abroad in the future? And amazingly, only about 1 in 5 people, 22.3%, said yes. Again, you got a whopping 16.8% who said, I don't know. I feel like this I don't know category, it's just the same people just checking off that box. 16.3% of people were like, no interest at all, with 14 saying no interest, and about 30% have interest. So if I take a look at the graph, it's pretty much split. About 50% of people are either interested or very interested, and between the I don't know and zero interest is, again, roughly 50%. Now, this being said, Japanese love to travel. I've noticed in my time in Japan that tourism and getting out of the country and visiting Europe, North America, Australia, Korea is a really, and this is coming from a Canadian who was raised in a smaller, I wouldn't say mid-sized town in Canada, and people didn't really travel that much around me, but now the people around me travel quite a bit, to the point where my own travel is overshadowed as being not all that significant. So that should hopefully say how much people travel. But for those who said, you know, that they do want to live abroad, the question of why you wish to live abroad is, there's a country that I want to be in. I love the culture of other countries because it's fun. I want to study other languages. I can interact with non-Japanese. But the thing that I want to put in here the most is, I often talk about how I spent a great deal of time in university in Canada with Japanese students, and this is where I picked up a lot of my Japanese. And I get a lot of the same reaction quite often, which is, well, these Japanese students went all the way to Canada just to what, speak Japanese? And this is a question that I often asked to Japanese students who were studying abroad in Canada. What made you want to come here? And the number of people who said, like, I want to work here in the future was probably the smallest. The number who said, oh, I want to be here for English was quite possibly the largest. But in between those two groupings, there was a very unique answer that I got quite commonly that surprised me, which is, I just want a couple of years to escape the pressure of Japanese society and my family and live in freedom. I'm not particularly interested in the country, the language, or any of that. I just want the freedom, which is why I've attached to a local group of Japanese people and am living a Japanese life here in Canada. So there is something like that as well, but I don't feel like that's going to come out super quickly in a survey. So outside of the charts and graphs that are available within this study, and the majority of this study is in Japanese, but there's an English source that I will link later for you in case you're interested in checking it out for yourself. The things that I hear the most from the Japanese people around me, and a lot of this, whether it be, you know, fellow film producers, people that I've worked with over the years, or even the shamisen players that I travel with, I would say every single time that I come back to Japan with Japanese people, I love to ask the question, like, what does it feel like to be back? Whether we've been gone for a week, 2 weeks, 3 days, I've asked pretty much every member that I've traveled with because it helps me gain an insight into how they feel about their country. And I get a really similar answer here too, to pretty much every single one. And that's, I'm really glad to be back in Japan. There's something comforting about it. There's something relieving about it. It feels safe. It feels like home. And the conversations that I have after this, as a bit of a follow-up, always produce slightly different results. a lot of the ones, I think the number one answer that I hear above all else is sumiyasu. Sumiyasu means it's really easy to live here. There's a certain comfort that goes about it. And I think a large part of this is also just kind of built into the nature of Japanese society, in the fact that having everyone around you speak the same language, not having to worry about. I've felt this as well when I've gone back to places like Canada, the US, Australia, just being able to not have to put any effort whatsoever into reading the languages around me. I went from Japan to doing a couple trips back and forth between Japan and Italy, and this was after Korea. So I had been in, you know, three different countries, all with languages that are not native to my own. In Korea and Italy, obviously, I don't really speak or read the language. In Italy, it was easier to guess because at least it was Roman letters. But then when I got to Australia and then Canada and US, there was just something so incredibly familiar and relaxing about being able to pick up a package and read what's on it, or a street sign, or a sign inside of a building, just anything, a magazine, a pamphlet, the fact that it was all in a language that didn't take me any effort to decode was so relaxing. And when we talk about it, when we come back from these trips, or even just with Japanese friends who live here in Japan, the language thing is one that comes up very, very often. For as much as Japanese people do seem to love English, and for the number that are learning English, there's always going to be a very unique comfort that comes with your native language. And outside of this, very similar to the survey, the next thing that always came up was food. Oh, the love for the food in Japan. And I think it's deeper than just, I like this food or I enjoy this food. It's tiny little things. For example, the availability of certain ingredients, or even how much you can trust the ingredients. Japanese have a unique trust for food that was produced and grown in Japan, and in many cases are more likely to purchase rice or vegetables grown in Japan over that from overseas, simply because of their trust for the overall quality of the product. That being said, there are also certain flavors that are unique to Japan. I think I had mentioned previously that it was really interesting to find out. I was eating a bag of Cheetos here that I purchased from a convenience store, and I was like, something just doesn't taste the same about these. And when I checked the ingredients, it actually had soy sauce listed. So even things like Cheetos are adjusted to kind of match the Japanese flavor. And that's just one example. There are definitely plenty of them. But even something as small as rice. I had just come back about a week or so ago from being in the US with two shamisen players, Kiki, and they both went and got rice at one of the restaurants that we were at. And they're like, wait, what is this? And it came to my realization that that was probably their first time ever to have long grain rice. They were so accustomed to short grain Japanese sticky style rice, they couldn't believe what was placed in front of them. They were like, how is this rice? This isn't rice. And so even little things like that, the fact that you know in Japan when you order rice, you know what you're going to get. So these little things of the comforts of language or the comforts of food, these are things that kind of make up our basis as a person, a human. They're things that we're raised with. And these things combined with the humanistic, just basic need for something like safety of your environment and that around you, the ability to enjoy the entertainment, something like anime and manga and everything like that. It all just comes together to make Japan a really enjoyable country, not just for non-natives of Japan like us, but also for people who are born and raised in Japan. Now, I don't know about you, but all of this put together has really left me just kind of wanting to know more. That being said, This survey that I found was originally in an article by Sora News that I'll link below, but some of the answers were really interesting. Something that I would like to know a little bit more is the deeper thoughts on these societal issues. And if this is something that you would like to know more about, definitely hit me up on Twitter or some kind of DM, and I'll see if I can't find a piece of content or even see if we can't work out an interview with one or two Japanese people for the podcast itself. I hope that you did get some value out of this little mini Tokyo Lens podcast episode. If you did, it would mean the world to me if you would take 2 seconds out of your day, jump over to iTunes and leave a review. Each one of the reviews really helps. I really love reading them. It would make my day if you took 2 seconds and jumped over there right now. Thank you guys so much for joining. This is going to be a little bit of a busy month. We might be down to one podcast episode a week just for this month, and then back up to two or so for July. Thank you for being here. I hope the rest of your day goes beautifully no matter what you are doing. And you guys know, I will talk to you again real soon.